This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 248 for Wednesday, October 18th, 2017. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where I hang out with my friends and talk about geeky stuff. Like this guy, Brockett Vola of Candy of This Day. How are you?
Good. For sitting there, you sounded a little unsure about a lot of things, and I will not take that to heart.
Well, I think part of it is it was 3 p.m. today. Before I realized, one, I hadn't eaten lunch, and ooh, two, it was Wednesday. I was cruising through this whole day going, I got all evening, it's going to be great, it's Tuesday. Didn't I say it was Tuesday yesterday? Quickly check my phone. Oh, it's Wednesday, great. I still have to work out, eat dinner, and have a podcast tonight. So no, I have no time. So I had to kind of press my afternoon. I had a guy come to fix some of the issues with my floor today, so that threw a monkey wrench in the whole thing to do that, which was...
Woof. Don't go with the wrench in the floor.
Yeah, no, there was no... Yeah, a little bit of a bump. Yeah, they floored right over it. It's fine. No, it's... all the errors, I think I might have ranted about this on the show at some point over the last few months because it was the summer where I had new flooring put in and they didn't finish the job particularly well. So I've somehow, over the course of 3 months it's taken to get people to come in and actually fix the issues. What I find so amusing is that two guys came last Friday and this one guy came today. They're both very nice. They both do very good work. They're from the same company. But literally their fixes have been like, they're here for maybe 45 minutes. You know, he's here for maybe an hour. Like it's not like it's taking them entire days to fix it. It's just these corners that the floors had cut, quite literally, that are causing all these issues. And really all it takes is just that extra hour or even just the time to do it right the first time, you know, the five minutes it takes to do it right versus the 45 minutes it takes to have someone come back and do it correctly, right? It's mind-boggling, you know, as someone that takes a lot of pride in the art that I do. I've been bogged down lately. I've been busy. You know, I've been pushing some deadlines, but what I'm delivering is always the very best of my ability. And if I don't do that, my clients don't come back.
Yeah.
Right. And so like, I can only imagine, like, it's not me that's paying for the floor. It's my landlord and they own several buildings.
Oh,
so you'd think that this flooring company would just like, well, there's a lot of floors owned by this client. We should probably keep them in good standing, you know? Instead, they've had to deal with me knocking, you know, emailing them a couple times a week going, hey, where are the floor guys coming? When are they coming? They coming now? They coming tomorrow? When are they coming?
You know, what's that?
I've been the squeaky wheel for a little while. But yeah, other than that, things are good. I've been busy, running a Kickstarter. So
yeah, Kickstarter.
Yeah. I want to let people know that, we had Rob Momartz on Comics Coast to Coast last week. We have been running the Kickstarter now for 2 weeks. There are 2 weeks left. So we were in the middle. It goes until November 2nd. But if you go to forgepublishing.com/inktank, that link will just kind of take you right to the Kickstarter page because the Kickstarter link is really long and problematic to type in, but forgepublishing.com/inktank will take you right there, or just find Forge Publishing or Rob on social media. We're talking about it every day. Watch the video. Let Rob tell you all about the book. It's black and white art. His stuff is phenomenal. It's all over the page. It's all over his social media. He does traditional work. It's brush on paper, and we're trying to put together a really big, really nice black and white art book for people that like that kind of thing. So if you do, even if you don't have the budget to pick up the book, because you know it's $40 for a soft cover, the Canadian, you know, plus a little bit of shipping, etc. There's lots of spots for smaller support, and one of the biggest things that we can do right now is just retweet, share the campaign, try to find friends that you know are into comics, that you know like black and white stuff, and tell them about the book. Cause we're just trying to get the word out to as many people as possible right now, to try and move the funds a little bit closer to goal. We've been doing steadily, you know, so far we're almost at 30%. It's a pretty lofty goal, but it's a big book. It's going to be over 130 pages and it has to be laid out and edited and all that kind of stuff. If you were around for me talking about, Daily Paintings with Piper Thibodeau, it's the same sort of idea. It's just, it's a different format, but it's the same kind of art book. We're going to do like creator owned, and there's going to be lots of writing in it from Rob talking about his work, etc. Actually, one of the compliments that we got about Daily Paintings was just how much writing there was in it, which I thought was really cool. I mean, people just expected a book of her paintings, but they got a lot of information from Piper as well, which I thought was really nice. So we're planning on doing that with Rob too. And it's all going to be the same manufacturers and stuff. So if you do happen to own Daily Paintings, then the same people who have designed and edited and made Daily Paintings are going to be working on Ink Tank for Rob. So it's forgepublishing.com/inktank. If you are at all interested in sharing that campaign, I would very much appreciate it. And so would Rob. And then you can also look up a bunch of interviews that he's done over the last couple of weeks, kind of promoting and all that kind of stuff. Get to know Rob a little bit too, which I think is really fun. But that is, I mean, that's my big news right now. But you, sir, have a new place.
Yeah, we have a condo, which is fine. It's the least sexy of things. You can well, I
mean, you own a home, dude. That's a feat. Like, life box check, right? Like, you've done that.
Well, that's part of it. I mean, from the outside, like, everyone's like, God, you guys are just not excited. I think the problem was we made offers on 4 other condos and those didn't work out. And then we found this one, which is great. I mean, it's definitely ranked up there with one of the ones that we lost. So this one was cheaper, so in the long run it's nicer. But but it's interesting because now we live – there's a lot of great things. I think we're just – Laura and I would just get to a certain point where like something will happen and then it'll be good and we'll sort of relish it for a moment, and then the next thing we have to do kind of comes to mind. And so by the time, like, the process of buying a place takes a very long period of time. And I won't bore people like I usually do on the podcast, but it takes a while. So by the time it actually is accomplished and you quote unquote pop champagne, you're fairly deep into the moving process and or other processes of the house and home improvement area of things. So it's sort of a weird layer, but it has put us on Loyola University campus, which is a Chicago-based university. And basically, it's lots of fast food places around here, a few sort of like bar restaurants type of things. And I'm back on a rail line that I was on when I first moved to Chicago, as opposed to the one we were on. But it's just interesting because I grew up in a college town in a capital city. And so it's funny to be again in sort of a college-y area. It's not great, I guess, for our diet. We're trying really hard to make sure that we get out to the local, local produce place, and get that sort of stuff.
Are there any weekly markets nearby?
We were, they don't really, no, there is a, well, there's an Aldi, which is the chain here. Whole Foods, we have Whole Foods. But both of which, we're kind of waiting for Whole Foods to get the whole Amazon Prime special discount scenario, because we checked out the Whole Foods, and even though the quote unquote prices were slashed, it's still fairly it's not extremely cheap or budgety level type of stuff. So we'll see what there. But we're feeling out where our produce and grocery store is going to be. And Laura and I are pretty bad because we're not super spenders. We don't do a lot of traveling. We don't do a lot of huge purchases other than the furniture we got when we moved into this place to sort of replace some stuff. But But when it comes to eating out, we eat out, I would say, fairly regularly, to a point where it's embarrassing to tell people who are constantly cooking. And sometimes they take pictures of the things they've cooked and put them on social media constantly, reminding other people that they don't do any of those.
I don't know who you'd be talking about there.
The pancakes of Instagram. hashtag. Yeah, but so being in this area has been great because – you know, the fast food is top notch. We have a lot more options within walking distance, but it is, we're trying to find a good balance. And of course, this is the month where I do candy of this day pretty specifically, which I just review a different candy for the day. And so layer on the extreme intake of candy I have for this month with the newfound fast food. So I'm trying to really pay attention when my Apple Watch tells me that that my rings are not closing today. So I need to take a look. Yeah. Try to monitor.
Yeah, pick that grocery store that's the long walk.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's funny, around here we're starting to see the prices change in supermarkets. I've been getting some stuff cheaper because, I mean, it's the fall, so the stuff is being harvested. So, like, carrots and potatoes, like, root vegetables, you can buy them super cheap. You know, it's like $2 for, like, 10 pounds of potatoes. It's crazy. But then on the other side, all the green vegetables are going away. You know, So the broccoli and the cucumbers and all the things that I like to have fresh in the summertime are starting to go, oh, that's $3.99 for, you know, an elastic band around 3 sprigs of broccoli. And you're like, wait, what? That's crazy. Yeah. You know, because that does me for, oh, well, maybe 3 meals, two if I'm having a lot of vegetables, but like, you know, 3 big dinners with, like, you know, chicken and broccoli and rice or something. And that $4 does me like twice, maybe 3 days. And then, like, well, I'm back to the grocery store buying more vegetables because I try not to buy canned stuff. I try to eat pretty fresh. And like you said, I do cook a lot. Ultimately, it's better than going out to eat. I imagine it's probably cheaper. But it's, for me, something that I've noticed big time. I still go out to eat from time to time, but it's the not buying the frozen stuff. Like, not buying the stuff that's just got so much salt and so much preservatives and stuff in it. Not only do I feel better, but, it, you know, I've lost a little bit of weight since I started doing that. And it's not like I'm on a diet. Like, I have burgers and beer every Friday night. Like, I, you know, I eat what I want. You know, like, I was joking around with my sister the other day. I was in one of the grocery stores here picking up a couple of quick things on the way home. And I walked by and I was like, I kind of want to get something for dessert. I've had kind of like a sweet tooth the last couple of days. And I don't want to get, like, I shouldn't get cookies and I shouldn't get a pie because, like, I live alone. So, you know, I end up eating them all, right? But then they had chocolate muffins on sale for like $3. It's like, they're muffins, but I know that they're going to be closer to cupcakes than muffins.
Oh, right? Yeah. Muffins are sometimes worse than donuts.
Exactly. So I was like, these are like double chocolate decadent muffin things. It's like they're muffins is in quotation marks, right? So I brought them home and I was joking with my sisters, like, so my friend who cooks a lot doesn't know really any baking, you know, recipes. Hypothetically, if I was to make, you know, icing for hypothetical muffins that I may or may not have bought on sale earlier today, how would one do that? Because you know, it's like, because when you buy cupcakes, they usually come with icing, right? And you just, So I had this epiphany on the bus ride home. I was like, oh, I could make icing for these muffins. You know, hands in your hips, standing proud. I don't know how to make icing. It's like something that several of my friends that bake all the time have, like, you know, a buttercream recipe just in their brain because they do it so often. But I don't bake because I end up eating it all. I don't have anyone to share it with. I don't have work to take it to because work will eat anything. You know, you bake yourself a pan of brownies, you grab 3 or 4 for home and you take the rest into work. Doesn't happen. The whole pan of brownies stays with me for the week.
Yeah.
You know, and then I really have to close the rings on the Apple Watch that I don't have. So, but I found the biggest sink with all this cooking, which, I mean, might be, I'm curious, it might be the reason why you guys eat out so much. What I've lost with all the cooking is time. I enjoy it. It's awesome. But man, you know, I'll break for dinner at 6:30 or 7 and I'm done dinner. I'm like, God, it's 9 o'clock. Why is it 9 o'clock? It's like, well, because it took me 45 minutes to make dinner and then I, you know, eat and sit and relax for an hour. And all of a sudden, you know, an hour and a half or, you know, an hour and 45 has gone by. It's like, well, holy crap. you know, yeah. it's tough. I mean, it depends on what you're doing. If you're some things, like one thing that's nice about winter is that if you're cooking roasts or, you know, chickens or something, they take a long time. So you can turn on the oven, make dinner, and then just go work while it's cooking. You don't actually have to be there. But mm-hmm. a lot of the stuff that I'm doing right now, it's kind of this weird in-between season where it's like I'm still grilling on the barbecue and I'm still doing stovetop stuff. And so it's not quite as hands-free. Like you kind of have to be attentive when something is on the barbecue. So mm-hmm. it's a little bit a little bit daunting that way in terms of just the time sink. Are you guys so busy that is that why you're going out for fast food that much?
Yeah, well, I mean, just naturally, that's sort of how we are. I think it just became, well, first off, we have 9-to-5s, and then transit-wise, just taking the train alone for me, I have 45 minutes to an hour to get back mm-hmm. home. Mm-hmm. So by the time I would get back home is essentially when we would sit down to watch either Hulu or live television or whatever. I'm not always taking like an actual full lunch. My work has been, I don't know. And then some days I'm just like, whatever. So like, I'm not always actually really having a meal. Maybe I will have, I don't know, like a soup for lunch or whatever. Mm-hmm. I didn't used to always eat like between 6 and 7, but now usually when we get home, we're eating like closer to 7 or so. And then Laura, when she comes home, you know, she's like feeding the cats. And then if night she has rehearsal, it's like, well, she's out and about.
And you've only got a small amount of time to eat, right? And spend time together. And then,
yeah, exactly. And, yeah. And honestly, I think part of it is just, we're trying to get to a point. It's easier in the summer when the weather's better, but in the winters in Chicago, it's easy to just, as soon as you get home, you dump your body down and you're just like pooped. And so we're like ready to just sit and like sort of binge television and whatnot. So we're trying to like change things a bit. I think when we first moved in here, there was a couple nights where we like sat around and played like a game together, like a board game together. And, mm-hmm. you know, when the weather was better, we like walked out and I like ate outside with like a bunch of the patio airs and that whatnot. And we're actually, I have a 9-minute walk to the beach, which is a lakefront beach.
Wow.
In Chicago, but still
that's awesome.
So once it'll be back to nice weather, that'll be a nice place to go and do what not, but we moved at the end of the season. So we're just now in the fall, but yeah, we're just, neither one of us grew up in a situation where we were cooking or we were in a household that was super cooking intensive. Like my dad was more Mr. Leftovers than Mr. Cook. Like he would do the cooking, but then you would end up eating leftovers for half the amount of days. Or if you ate out, you would eat the leftovers the next day. So I have that part. Like if we eat whatever out that night, yeah, and take it home, I'll eat that the next day. Laura's not a big leftover person, so I end up sort of doing the whole,
yeah,
all right, what am I mishmashing here? Burgers and tacos from the last 2 days.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, like, I find too, I mean, after my recent vacation in the U.S., like, the portions down there are so big. And I was doing the same thing. I was like, God, how the hell am I going to feed myself, you know, eating out at restaurants for this week that I'm driving through, you know, South Utah and all this kind of stuff. And it was really easy. I would have breakfast and breakfast was usually diners and that's always cheap and a decent meal. And I would walk all that off during the day, but then I'd have a big meal at dinner time. Well, I mean, half the time I'd end up taking some of it home with me and that would be, you know, lunch in the park the next day or, you know, even just sometimes like I would be driving in the car from one point to another and I would be driving over the dinner hour. So I would just, you know, find a picnic spot and just eat the leftovers because it was literally two meals, you know, and I eat a lot. Like, I mean, and these are not necessarily fast food chains, but, you know, burgers and fries and diner type stuff, but sit down restaurants, but still, like, if you ask them, you can say, hey, can I have this to go when you're kind of done with your meal and you're like, hey, can you wrap that up for me? And they're like, yeah, sure. You know, and it's like half a giant hamburger and, you know, half a plate of fries, just because, a lot of times I think too, it was the weather. It was so hot that I wouldn't want to eat a whole lot.
yeah, exactly. You feel so heavy.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? So, But yeah, I can see how leftovers. But you guys need to do maybe like a cooking on the weekends. Like my sister does that. She'll cook a decent meal on a Saturday or a Sunday, and then she'll have leftovers kind of like Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah, we go through phases of lunch prep throughout the week.
Yeah,
and that sort of thing. So it's more routine, and I think right now one of the routines we're trying to get more into is a solid bedtime. And just more general like exercise and whatnot. So
well, yeah, I mean, if you guys got 9 to 5 plus an hour long commute, I mean, that means you got to get up, you know, 2 hours at least before your shift starts, you know,
yeah.
I mean, that adds, I remember when I had to do that. And then, cause I had the same thing. I've got about a 45 minute commute to most of the places that I used to work. And that was always a thing. It was getting up at zero dark, stupid in the winter hours when it's still dark and you have to, you know, shower and breakfast and leave, and you're waiting for the bus and the sun is like just coming up. You're just like, yeah, God, yeah. What am I doing? Yeah, especially when it's like minus 20 and, you know, January and freezing and windy. And it's like bloody miserable. And so those are the kind of days where like, oh, I'm really glad that the shepherd's pie that I made on Sunday is in the fridge and all I have to do is nuke it when I get home and I'm good, right?
Yeah.
Like, so that kind of stuff usually helps. But speaking of all this food and all the stuff that's bad for us, you've been doing a candy of the day for October, so we're on 18. Have you had any favorites so far this year? Are they all different, or are any repeats from last year?
No, I tried to do no repeats. There are some that have been mentioned in other ones, but I make sure that I didn't highlight those specifically. And then there are ones that have components of other things, like Reese's Cups, and then Reese's Big Cup with Reese's Pieces, and then I've done Reese's Pieces recently.
Right.
Which are all, to me, very different things, just given, you know, whatever it is. But
yeah,
this year I tried to specifically find even more obscure ones. There's this place in Chicago called Dylan's Candy Bar, which is, like, it's truly sort of Willy Wonka-esque.
Okay.
And the amount of, like, you know, the big like almost floor to ceiling things where it's got loose candy where you scoop them into bags. There are ones that are like Dylan's itself makes its own chocolate bars of various flavors, from red velvet cake to, you know, a maple waffle to, you know, peanut butter and jelly was one of them. And then, you know, generic like mint chip and caramel or whatever. And then they have like all this. So they have like chocolate sections, the scoop candy. They have like a whole sections of like boxed stuff. And then there was this whole part to the back, which was a lot of candy bars. And a lot of them, one time I had visited to try and get something, and I just noticed a lot of them like stood out in my brain as like, I haven't seen this one before, so I'll have to remember that in October. So I went back and I loaded up and I got 6 or so, but I mean, that only gets me through 6 days. So now I'm sort of weeding in some more sort of semi-classics here and there. But
right.
I was really, really hoping to get more international ones. We used to live by a grocery store that had a few international ones. And so I was kind of hoping that I'd be able to find something like that, but it's been difficult. So, and there are also candy bars that are sort of repurposed for different places. I think it's the Galaxy Bar by Dove. Is essentially just sort of a Dove chocolate bar, but for I forget what nation it was weird. For, but yeah, it's just different stuff like that.
It's
so.
Almost like you could go and find like a, you know, a Korean grocer, or, you know, an Indian grocer, or like something that specifies in all foods for you know, a specific type of cuisine, but then you might find some like international favorites, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's what I've noticed though is a lot more international like cookies and like almost confectionaries.
Right.
And I don't do like cookies. I don't do like
it's all
koala
candy.
Yummies. That's right. Yeah. So I just mostly tried to stick to the sugar candies that are like gummy based or sugar based, and then like chocolate bars and that sort of thing. Basically, things that either come in a small enough package, well, an American small package, which everyone knows is about 3.5 pounds of whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, that you could you know, supposedly eat at, you know, share between two people at a movie theater is probably the biggest, like those kind of movie size boxes. Yeah. And a lot of people sometimes will be like, how are you not dead? You've eaten so much. And like, there are certain treats where like, sure, I get a box of like lemon heads, but I'm not eating all the box of lemon heads one day. Like I've had lemon heads before. So really all I'm doing is just refreshing myself for the moment. Mm-hmm. But then there are just certain things I'm like, good and plenty. I had plenty when I had two of them, and I was like, and done for life. Like that is still on my chart as my least favorite candy. It's a licorice candy. So if you're not a licorice person, that makes sense. But or black licorice, I should say, because I actually like Twizzlers. Which actually, I had a few questions. I think last time we talked about this. You're not a big candy person.
No.
But I was wondering if you had thoughts on what team you would be between some classic like candy face-offs, because there's a lot of like ones out there where people are like very adamant about one or the other. Mm-hmm. So are you familiar with the Red Twizzlers and Red Vines?
So Red Twizzlers are the ones that are twisty. Mm-hmm. And then red vines are like a bunch of little ones that are all stuck together.
Oh, no, I think there's like the pulling peel Twizzlers. Red vines almost kind of look like almost straws where maybe there's like, you know, the ridges on it, but the ridges aren't as like twisted and they're more perfectly circular. So they would look like straws. You could actually kind of bite them off and use them like straws. Twizzlers are almost like a braided longer piece of candy that's a more opaque and a bit flattened, so it doesn't really, it still has a hollow center, but it's more flattened out.
So what you call red vines, we colloquially call Twizzlers. I'm looking at the picture right now. It's really funny, and it's probably just a Canadian thing. Yeah, like if I go to Hershey's.com and Twizzlers are there, what they show up as Twizzlers are definitely, see, I see what you mean about the red vines where it's a bunch of little things all twisted together. I think they're just both the same as far like up here. It's just licorice. Like it's just twisted licorice.
Oh my goodness. You're basically saying you're team Jacob and team Edward.
I've had them both. I like them both. I would prefer what you would call a red vine. The one that has like the one that you can bite off and have like there's a hole in the middle versus the ones. Cause I find the ones that are twisted into like not a braid, but like the ones that have like multiple vines all twisted around one. I find those too sweet. It's like they're too flavory and too chewy. I'm not a gummy candy guy. And I think that's where the Twizzlers I find, too gummy, I think is where I end up landing. It's more of a texture thing probably. But yeah. I do like black licorice, not every black licorice, but I do like black. What's funny is like, I like black licorice, but I don't like black licorice jelly beans. You know what I mean? There's the real thing. And then there's the, oh God, what are you trying to do to me?
Yeah.
You know,
horrible. And then there's
Nibs, which are, I know we talked about this before, and the Nibs candies are the ones that look like little pills, I think. And those ones are multicolored and stuff. Nope.
Yeah.
So the Nibs, those are not Nibs. What are they called?
Interesting.
Yeah.
No, yeah. The Nibs are just
red licorice. No, I'm thinking about something else. They're called Good and Plenty, maybe?
Oh, God. Good and Plenty? Really? That's what you're talking about? The hot pink and white?
White. And some of them are round. Some of them are square. Some of them got little like candy beads on them.
Oh, I think I've seen those. Good and Plenty here essentially looks exactly like Dr. Mario pills.
No. Those I don't like. Those are not the ones I like. Man, that's really going to trip me up. I know we've talked about this before, too. I'm just trying to Google an image here. Black licorice candy. I'm just going to throw in Canada there just to kind of see if it's a regional thing. It's not goodies. It is, gosh, what are these called? I've got the right picture of them, but I'm just trying to figure out what they're actually called. Wow. I'm gonna Skype you the image just so that we're on the same page. You might know this. You might know this just because.
Oh, so they're licorice.
Yeah.
It's essentially Twizzlers for me, and then.
Right.
The ones I think you're describing, though, the ones that are more braided, there are ones called Twizzlers Pull and Peel, which are essentially braided pieces that you literally pull apart like string cheese.
Yeah.
Those tend to be more sugary. I also find that the consistency of the licorice itself is a little bit more like you pull it and it kind of tears more than actual licorice strands tend to be more resilient.
Yeah.
I've seen these before, the ones you're describing that are just like...
Yeah, I just linked it in Skype for you. It's a Huffington Post article of all things, but...
they remind me of like really tacky magnets you see in a fridge because they're all a mismatch of like pastels with thick bars of black or thick dots.
Thick dots,
they're like really bad magnets or buttons... Like from the 70s. That's what they scream to me. I don't do black licorice real or fake very well. I just pretty much do the cherry licorice. But between the great red vines versus Twizzlers fights, I side on the Twizzler side. Yeah. But also
licorice all I've sorts. Found, does that make sense?
Licorice all sorts.
Or all sorts is what they're called.
Oh, all sorts.
I finally found a bag with a. With a name on it, yeah. Waterbridge All Sorts.
Oh, I've never. Yeah.
I'm curious as to whether you'll recognize these or not. My first memory of these, they were on a cake. Like someone had used them to decorate the fringe of a cake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, they look like something that would be in like a weird.
Yeah,
Jim Henson.
Yeah, they're definitely black licorice. Like they're for black licorice fans. Like they're. They definitely have a serious black licorice thing. I mean, they're one of my mom's favorites, I would say.
But, what did happen?
What are the other ones that you're curious about me being divided on?
Well, there's a lot of people who feel, and again, I don't know how far this crosses borders, but Heath bars versus Skor bars, spelled S-K-O-R. They're both chocolate with toffee in the middle.
So I've had a Skor bar.
Okay.
I don't know if I've had a Heath bar before. If I have, I must have been in the States because I don't think we can get them up here.
Illegal. You gotta run the border with some candies, Joel. Make a little side money. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I recognize some of the names from your Instagram hashtag, just from pop culture, like hot tamales and fun dip and Mike and Ike and stuff like that.
That's a better question. How many of the ones like, so for instance, Fun Dip, Mike and Ike, those are like everywhere. Like they're in every CVS in America. Are those like
rare? We've definitely had Fun Dip before. It might go by a different name, but I'm pretty sure I've seen Fun Dip. Mike and Ike's I've seen, Junior Mints I've seen, Reese's Pieces, of course. Fifth Avenue, I've only heard of it, never seen one in the wild. Hot Tamale, same thing. For that, Hot Tamales, like some of these you'd have to go to something like, we have a very similar store to the one that you have in Chicago. It's called Freak Lunchbox.
You sent me pictures.
Yeah, great. It's a lot of fun, really cool lunchboxes too. But they would have some stuff like that where you wouldn't be able to get them in just your average corner store. The average corner store is going to be Nestle, Hershey, and those sort of things. Same with grocery stores. Sky Bar, never heard of it. Like that kind of thing. Good News, not a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, Henry, we have.
It's Nestle. That's why. I mean, Nestle is probably – Hershey does great business in North America, but Nestle's worldwide.
Yeah.
So it definitely is one of those brands that will rebrand. What's interesting is that you'll hear of regional candy. So here's a fun fact. When I was looking at it this year – the best selling candy in the whole world is M&M's.
Believe it.
They sell the most.
They're like kryptonite for me.
Oh, you love, like, what's your favorite M&M then? Because there's so many.
The peanut M&M. Classic yellow bag peanut M&M. I like them all, but those are the ones I really like.
Okay. So you have no problem with like the almond ones? I really like almond ones.
It's been a really long time since I've had the almond ones. I feel like it's one of those things where I don't eat them that often. So when I do, I tend to gravitate towards the ones I know I like. One of my local grocery stores makes M&M chocolate chip cookies. So those are not the peanut ones, but they have just the regular M&Ms. But it's the kind of thing where people will buy me Christmas gifts and it'll be like a bag of M&Ms in the stocking. So like that's, and they know that I like the peanuts. So that's when I get them. I've had the almond ones, but not in any kind of great capacity. I think I just shared them with someone one time. They're good. I mean, I like almonds too. I like the peanut butter ones.
Oh God. Peanut butter ones are my personal favorite.
Yeah. I think they're my sister's favorite too. And there's something else. There's crunchy ones that you can't get in Canada.
So there's crunchy. So what's weird is basically crunchy got put out there, which is essentially almost like if they took like a crunchy waffle type of wafer and shoved it in a M&M. So it's crunchy, but it's essentially almost just like a wafer or whatever, but it's so small that it doesn't matter. And then those did not do well, you know, like, and each M&M in the States, like each color is a different type. So for a while, was it blue that was crispy? There was one color that they were marketing. It was the crispy one, and then crispy didn't sell well. So that peanut kind of, or that M&M just went away for a while. And then they did pretzel, which I liked better, most specifically because they were lumpies and you could tell they still had a little bit of salt on them, you know. And I'm just, you know, to me, sweetness plus saltiness together is good. Like I'm somebody who does like chocolate covered pretzels.
Yep.
I particularly love pretzels with peanut butter inside them, or chocolate covered pretzels, or if you can really find them, chocolate covered pretzel nuggets with peanut butter inside, which really and truly are pretty much the double whammy, the like triple whammy of like horrible for you but deliciousness. But now I've seen crispy come back, so I'm confused if pretzel died and crispy came back. You have your almond, you have your peanut, you have peanut butter, you have your classic. In the States, they have had at times mint. Which was primarily just green ones.
Yep. I've seen the mint ones in like Christmas time, like branded packaging where they're all green and red.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they'll do like pastel ones that are still just the regular flavors here for different time periods. But I do know there are certain ones, and the one that has recently shown up in stores and I've not tried it is caramel, depending on how you want to say it. That one I've no clue about. And to be frank, caramel to me is probably the most erratic of all candy things. Like chocolate for the most part to me, because I'm not a chocolate fiend, like I'm not like, you know, you would taste enough chocolate to be like, I know I love Dove chocolate a lot better than Hershey bar chocolate. Like sure. I have those differences. But for me, the thing that really stands out between different companies and brands is the quality of their caramel, because some of them do sort of almost like a molassesy, like it's very thick. It's almost got some grit to it with the sweetness, almost like, you know, when you're in the process of like cooking and you get the sugar and the glaze is happening and it's not quite 100%. And it's just basically, yeah, it's just like a almost molten sugar.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of ness of caramel, it tends to be in candy bars. And I think that one is better when specifically mixed with other things. 'Cause on its own, you're just essentially eating almost like too thick caramel. But then you go to the other side of the spectrum, which is like we have Cadbury Caramellos in the States, and they're essentially just like some Pips nuggets, and inside each chocolate nugget is caramel, just caramel. And this used to be my favorite bar, but since then my tastes have changed. But the thing about that is once you bite into it, there's a hollowness enough to the chocolate nugget that it crumbles when you bite into it, but then the caramel inside is very, it flows. It almost oozes.
Yeah, it sounds like a caramel bar.
Which one?
A caramel bar?
Caramel bar.
Caramel bar. How do they get the caramel in the caramel bar? That's always been it's a Cadbury.
Oh, well, if it's Cab Air, it probably, you know what? These look exactly like the same Pips. Yeah, I would guarantee you the Caramel Bar is just rebranded for different regions. Because Caramello, side by side, is the same nugget size. And those are good. I like that. If I'm going to have caramel on its own, I want it to be essentially oozing. So caramel and marshmallow are the two things that I think are the most divisive to me, because whereas caramel, I can see both sides of it, but I just want them mixed in certain things. Marshmallow, I have a definitive stance on, which is it needs to be fluffy or as close to marshmallow fluff as possible, because if it has any quality to it, which is rubbery or crunchy, then it is it's horrible. Yeah. It's pretty much like I can't do Lucky Charms. I can't do those things.
No. I'm not even, I mean, I'm a one kind of marshmallow guy, and that's like fireside. Like marshmallows on a stick, and that's really the only time I eat them. S'mores, of course, but it has to be like made by me with graham crackers and a chocolate bar, fireside. Like I generally don't like marshmallow candies. I used to eat it when I was a kid because you get like marshmallow Santas and stuff. But as an adult, I would never go for a marshmallow treat. Like the Easter time, little chocolate, or not chocolate, the little Easter peeps, the little marshmallow peep things.
Oh yeah. Peeps are just nightmare candies.
Yeah. No, like that kind of stuff doesn't, I don't know whether Cadbury cream egg, that's not marshmallow inside. That's more of like a milk.
It's nougat. A cream.
It's like a cream.
Yeah.
Nougat.
It's
yeah.
Just like a sugar cream.
Yeah. It reminds me of like Pot of Gold chocolates at Christmas time and that kind of stuff. Now I do like I like the caramel bar, and I think I would prefer that kind of caramel. But I do also like Quality Street chocolates at Christmas time, and some of the caramel in those it's a hard caramel. Like it melts in your mouth, but it's not a runny caramel when you bite into something. It's like a chocolate covered hard caramel, and I do like those.
Almost like the caramel toffees you'll sometimes see just individually wrapped by themselves.
Yeah.
Like that sort of thickerness.
Yeah, so
to
not like what's it called? Not rose gold. Werther's? No.
Werther's, yeah. No, yeah. not hard candy.
Not hard candy, no. It's I'm just trying to, if I can find like a, if you Google Quality Street candy, if you even know what I mean. That also might be a Canadian thing. It is the Quality Street tins are something that you would see in every grandmother's cupboard, because the tins would be kept and turned into coffee, into cookie tins.
Oh, I see
that, around here. The people that listen in Canada will know the Quality Street ones I'm talking about. They're yellow wrapped and they're long and narrow, and they're just like they're about half the length of your pinky finger, and they're just caramel and they're covered in chocolate. That's just super simple. That's all they are. So Quality Street would be like an assortment. Of stuff, but we're getting off the, like, this is not the kind of candy that you're talking about. You're talking about more like, you know, stuff that you'd buy individually at a store, like a chocolate bar or a box of M&Ms or Reese's Pieces and things like that. But so I would say between marshmallow and caramel, I definitely fall on the caramel side.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, as most people should. There are certain things that I think when they show up are interesting to hear about in candies, and it's just interesting to see how they're executed. I mean, like non-peanuts or almonds, because those are just wide varieties, but if you have a walnut or you have a hazelnut or that sort of thing, how those are used, coconut, which is not a nut, but I'm just, you know, whatever. And then just different jellies. Some things have jellies to them. So there's a lot of just different things out there that I'm interested in trying to find some of those. So, you know, people can always try and comment on the hashtag candy of this day, or hashtag candytober is my other hashtag for this time of month.
Cool.
Specifically. So for Halloween.
Very cool. Yeah, no, I've been following along, and it's really cool to read the reviews and some of the new stuff. And especially when it's like the other day, you know, I saw your Reese's Pieces post, and immediately I thought, oh, if Sobeys has Reese's peanut butter, like Reese's Pieces cookies, I am bringing those home tonight. They didn't have them, so I ended up with chocolate muffins on sale. But had they had the right kind of cookies, those are what would have been coming home. Because it's like, a chocolate chip cookie base, but instead of chocolate chips, there's Reese pieces in them. So there's no real chocolate. It's just candy and peanut butter.
Oh, it's so good though.
Yeah. Oh, they make fantastic cookies. It's really, really good that way too. So I guess we can kind of move into what we've been watching, and I want to talk about what you've got going on, because it's way more Halloween themed than what I've got going on. So tell us about The Babysitter.
Okay, so this was one of those things that Netflix just throws at you over and over again, as Netflix tends to do. For about a week, they have their hot new movie or television show, and it was just up. It just says The Babysitter, and it's got like a pop art picture of like a girl with shades licking a lollipop, that sort of thing. So my first thought was like, this was going to be like a raunchy, like sex comedy.
Right.
But as they edited the font, they changed the I in sitter to a knife. And then like, I just randomly, I had seen a non-spoiler headline thing sort of saying like something to the lines of like, basically it was Halloween or worthwhile for this season. And of course, as most of us wait eagerly for Stranger Things 2 to come out,
right,
as it's coming out soon, you know, we're all eager for our Halloween stuff. I'm a big Halloween person, to the point where a few weeks ago I had to post a thing saying like, I understand, God, geez, just more things of America, but I understand that we are T-minus 2 months away from Christmas. And I already understand that people who love Thanksgiving have already been conquered and destroyed by this country. But Halloween still is very popular, mm-hmm, and still is very fun. And when you go into a store and all of a sudden they already have Christmas-themed candy, like next to Halloween candy, it's like, what is happening? Like, this is a nightmare.
Oh, I saw Halloween candy on the shelf, on the floor, next to the back to school stuff in August.
See, and that's nice. Like that, and that, I mean, to some degree, I was seeing Halloween stuff like as soon as August or September starts, because fall, mm-hmm, and you can just kind of throw orange and brown around. But like specifically, I love Halloween. I don't watch a lot of horror films. I don't eat a lot of candy, but this time of year, it's fun to do both those things. And I try and catch up with a few horror films every once in a while. So I have a list of ones I want to see, but some of them I just are in different platforms. So today I just literally was like, all right, on my lunch, I'm going to watch The Babysitter because it's only an hour and 20 minutes. It's on Netflix. I heard a brief thing that said maybe it was worthwhile. So I watch it, and I have to tell you, I really, really enjoyed it.
Oh, wow.
I thought it was like a ton of fun. It's one of those things where like, I think the less you know, the better. But at the same time, if you kind of know even the general idea that there's going to be a babysitter and a kid, I mean, that's just a general premise to it. But you'll get there. You watch it. I'd also seen ahead of time it was directed by Mick G. MC, Big M, Lil C, Big G. Famous for the Charlie Angels films and basically making insane, weird, over-the-top action films here. Sort of like Michael Bay, but if Michael Bay really went full-on, you know, frat boy, like crazy.
Okay.
So I was a little anxious about
that. Yes, already?
but he, at the same time, Michael Bay is still trying to have like those shots where people dramatically stare and get spun around in 360s.
Right.
Mick G would just have people like dramatically like laugh and then like things explode around them. And then also like the camera goes upside down for a moment, like very like almost basically Guy Ritchie came to United States because he saw Mick G still had a job. And he was like, look, I can still make wackadoo movies that pop in and out of slow motion and have weird explosions.
Right.
But anyway, for all those reasons, this film I was a little anxious about, but it was tons of fun. The Babysitter is a lot of it's got a lot of laughter to it. It is a hard R, but in a cartoonish way, I will say. Certainly not something that you're going to sit down and watch with anybody that you don't feel comfortable watching even like a Friday the 13th movie with,
right,
because there's still language, but there's thankfully, unless I missed it, no nudity, which almost never happens in horror films, or at least, right, American horror films. And there is limited
use of language. I mean, there's a few F-bombs here and there, but like overall, it was just, I just thought it was delightful. And there are elements to it that if you watch it, you can kind of pull, you can kind of see it pulls from different things and stuff like that. But in the same way, like when you watch Stranger Things, it just conjured something up in certain people that grew up in the 80s, particularly that grew up watching certain types of films that were very popular in the 80s.
Right.
That you could kind of put your finger on, but you can't nail immediately, but it's just a feeling, like a scent that's familiar. The Babysitter did that in moments for me, and I thought that was really fun. So it's only an hour. I mean, like with the credits off, which is about 5 minutes, really it's probably even under an hour and 20. Right. So it's not a huge super commitment. I will say the main kid is extremely charming. Of course the Babysitter is very cute and fun, but like at the same time, like the main kid, just like in Stranger Things, like, bless them, child actors really drive me nuts. This main kid, like, made me, like, I just love this kid. I thought he did a great job. So,
nice.
So I definitely recommend The Babysitter, just for some over the top, more sort of, you know, it's horror, but it's more thriller slasher type of horror than any sort of like supernatural horror.
Right. That's cool. I have a recommendation for you, and you'll laugh at this. Last week, Lou recommended Better Watch Out, which is a Christmas horror movie with a babysitter and a kid. And they're the main two characters in the whole thing.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Better Watch Out.
You know, like the...
It just came out. Okay.
Like the song lyric. Yeah. Yeah, it was like there was a second release last year, and then now it's out on video or something like that. But anyway, Lou said the same thing. He said, like, it's got some, not funny ha-ha moments, but, like, you know, horror movie funny, that sort of stuff. And he said that he also didn't want to give too much away. He said he was really surprised by it, and that he wanted to, like, he wanted to recommend it, but that he didn't want to get too over the top. Like, he's like, there's just some really irky, weird stuff, like, Warburton plays the dad, and the dad and mom are only in it for like the first like setup couple of scenes to like, you know, bring the babysitter over, you know, say hi to her, you know, introduce the kid to her or whatever. But apparently like Warburton is flirting with this 16-year-old, and it's like really sketchy and creepy. And so like, it's not like they're just this happy little family. Like there's all these weird little things that kind of put you on edge right from the beginning. Anyway, Lou really highly recommended it. So it sounds like it's something that'd be right up your alley.
It sounds great because this is very similar. The dad in this is played by Kim Marino, who people may recognize from A Smorgasbord of stuff, Wet Hot American Summer, Veronica Mars. He was in Role Models. He shows up in Party Down. He's in all these sort of things.
Right.
And he's really funny. And oddly enough, for you and me, Joel, fans of the Flash TV show, Robbie Amell, the original part of Firestorm, with Dr. Stein, the guy who paid with him, Stephen Amell's younger brother, he's in this. And like, at first I was like, where have I seen this kid from before? And I was like, oh God, that's him. And, anyway, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. It's super simple. Basically I don't know. It's just one of those movies that if you were to say a general gist of what is setting it up, you've already sort of talked about half the film. And to be honest, I mean, a really good horror film is really only supposed to give you a couple pops here and there, and then you're out of the theater. Like you're on, you know, there's very rare times where they make essentially the godfather of horror films that are like 3 hours long. So
yeah,
thankfully, but
I remember like the only horror movies that I've seen that I really kind of struck a chord with me and stuck with me over time that I would watch again are things like the original Alien, you know, sci-fi horror, stuff like that. I've never been a big horror guy. It's just never something that I really gravitate towards.
I like Hemlock Grove, though,
the first season.
Right. Well, what about those borderline ones of Shaun of the Dead, Zombieland,
I tried to
Cabin
watch Shaun of the
Woods.
Dead. Shaun of the Dead was okay.
It's very dry.
Cabin in the Woods I did see in theater, and I mean, it was fine, but it was like, I find a lot of them really tropey, which I get for people that like that kind of stuff, that's kind of the appeal. But like, me and my dad are the same way. When you're watching something, you know, it's a TV show about, you know, procedural crime or whatever, or it's a horror movie or whatever, and something bad happens and there's noises and stuff outside and somebody goes outside. What, like, why are you going outside? Well, because the script says go outside so you can die. So, like, you have to, like, so that some of the stuff with Cabin in the Woods, I was like, okay, so this is the part where the actor that I don't recognize dies. Done. All right, cool. Moving on. Like, it just, like that kind of stuff I find a little bit tedious. I liked the imagination behind Cabin in the Woods. It was less about what the film was doing and what was like the underpinnings of it. That I thought was kind of cool. Like that, that was the kind of thing where like, oh, okay, now we're getting some Joss Whedon happening, and you know, I'm liking that. But for the most part, it's like, it wasn't really, it's just not a genre I really like. I will, if someone really highly recommends something, like, I will check it out, you know, like, for example, Cabin in the Woods. Like, I heard enough about it from people that I trust and people that like other things that I like. That's like, okay, I should probably go watch this. It's not like I disliked it, but it's more like, it's still just not my thing. But I'm trying to think about other horror sci-fi things that I would have watched. Like, I mean, obviously the Alien series in general, I've watched those before and they can be really freaky. Earlier ones more so than later ones.
It's like Alien is a space horror film and then Aliens is a space action film. Like, there's, I don't really find the horror in any of the other films outside of the first one. But have you seen The Thing, the original Kurt Russell, The Thing?
No. See, this is the thing. Like, I haven't seen any of those originals. I think might have seen one of the Freddy Krueger movies. I don't remember which one. I think I saw part of one of the very late Jason movies, Friday the 13th, but I mean, it could have been on a plane, like it could have been somewhere where it was on TV at a party. Like, I don't recall sitting down to physically watch anything like from beginning to end. Like, I'm thinking, like, I mean, Pan's Labyrinth is not really a horror movie, but it's fantasy, but it's definitely creepy. And there's another one that I just had in my head. Ex Machina. I found that terrifying.
Oh, I've heard that. I've heard good things about Ex Machina, but definitely not in the same vein of.
It's not a horror movie. Like, it's almost scarier after it's over. Like, it plants you with a bunch of thoughts, and you kind of go, "Whoa, okay, this is really really getting to me." But it's brilliantly acted. Like, it is phenomenally put together.
Yeah, I've heard it's really. Yeah.
No, you would definitely enjoy it. But it's one of those things, I think, where it's that tension that they maintain throughout the whole thing. Kind of like the first two seasons of Walking Dead. Like, when I was watching that, I was on the edge of my chair the whole time. Like, it was not, I didn't find it, it wasn't a relaxing kick up your feet and watch The Walking Dead. It was more like a, okay, I'm going to watch The Walking Dead. I'm watching the show and I'm keeping up with the show and I'm not sure if I want to watch the show, but I'm going to do it anyway. Like, you know, and it wasn't like the zombies, it wasn't really the zombies that were scary. It was that tension, that anxiety that they managed to maintain so well in that show. And those are the kind of things that I like versus Freddy and Jason and Child's Play. And I feel like I've seen some other murder mystery, like slasher films. I've certainly seen more of those than I have seen the fantastical horror things. I feel like there was one, I don't remember what it was called. It might be just called Pumpkinhead, but I saw it one time.
There is something called Pumpkinhead.
It's that's the name of the monster, I think. I don't remember if that's the name of the film.
Yeah, there is a film. Well, there is a film called Pumpkinhead, but the monster also was Pumpkinhead. I think it had Lance Hendrickson.
Yes. Maybe? Yeah, I think you're right.
These
are all the things that I watched when I was like 14, when I was old enough to stay up past my parents, but not really allowed to watch those movies. But they would be on at 12 o'clock at night on the Space Channel or, you know, whatever. So like, you'd end up watching them on extended cable late at night. And it wasn't that you had a choice. It was like, this is the movie that they're watching. And it's like, not Gremlins, but like, I can't remember what they were called, but they were little things with teeth, and like, or Tremors, you know, was one of those. There was a bunch of other ones like Pet Cemetery, but I don't think I stayed up to watch the whole thing. Like those are the kind of movies that I would have had early experiences with, and maybe that just kind of tainted me. It's like, those aren't real horror movies; they're just kind of campy things. Like, I've got friends that really like Night of the Living Dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that kind of stuff. I've never seen it. I think somebody had it on in animation school, kind of like in the background. And I thought, like, this is dumb. You know, like, I just,
yeah,
there's some stuff I find has this like nostalgia hook into people. And it's like, yeah, it was not part of my youth. And so I don't gravitate towards it, but I, you know, it's the same. It's probably the same reason why some people, I mean, Star Wars right now is a little bit more mainstream, but like, I will gravitate to almost any sci-fi and just try it just because it's sci-fi, and I will probably like it or at least give it a shot because I was so steeped in Star Wars and Star Trek when I was growing up, right? Whereas other people that were like into horror all the time, they give horror more of a shot. Like, for example, if I saw The Babysitter on Netflix, I mean, I'll probably try to check it out now that you've mentioned it, but I would have never hit play on my own.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. In the past, we have been on other sides of some films. I will always bring up, and this time of year, it kind of makes sense. Book of Life, I still think is a really great animated film that you hated. And I understand the reasons you hated it. But I guess part of, to me, and it is happening more and more in a culture that's saturated with the ability to get the word out about things. It's great, it's bad. Mm-hmm. But when something, whether it's a book, movie, film, or anything, you discover it the first time on your own, you usually almost attach yourself much more to it than if anybody else gave it to you. Like, what's interesting is when Harry Potter first hit United States, I just saw stacks and stacks of the first three books at Borders. And I was like, what are these things? And the covers, literally in like fourth or fifth grade, whenever it came out for me, maybe sixth grade, it just drew me in. So I got those. And so I discovered Harry Potter on my own. I wasn't even aware enough of the phenomenon to be like, I want to read those. Mm-hmm. So like, they're even more, I'm probably just the same way. I'm sure people like may or may not have had siblings or friends give them Lord of the Rings for the first time, or maybe they just literally stumbled upon Tolkien, but like, there's certain things that are that way, and I think there are certain movies that are that way, but I feel like the horror genre is just one of those in particular, because so much of it, like comedy, relies entirely on getting you when you're not expecting it, whether it's a laugh in comedy or whether it's a thrill. And it doesn't even have to be a scare, it just has to be something that like shoots your adrenaline up just enough. And I think that's the reason why a lot of times with horror films, like what scares one person or what through word of mouth gets to you doesn't always translate the same way. Like, for the most part, you could say this is the funniest movie or the scariest movie I've ever seen. But I've seen The Exorcist, which my mother to this day will not see pictures of. And it did not scare me. Like, I was creeped out by the premise of it. Mm-hmm. But I guarantee you the more recent exorcism type of films would probably have more of the production values that would frighten me than The Exorcist, which was very highly touted by the time I saw it. The same is true for The Shining. I have heard tons of people always have The Shining in their top 10 scariest films of all time. When I saw it with a group of people. Sure, I wasn't alone by myself, but I saw it with a group of people, and like, it just did not frighten me. So there's just certain things that I think, you know, that just get certain people in certain ways, and also discovering it. So I hope The Babysitter, if you do check it out, will make you laugh. I'm a little worried because I told you to check it out, but since I know that you would not check it out unless you were told to, it's sort of like a weird catch-22. So hopefully you'll forget that somebody told you to watch it, and you'll just watch it at some point, and it'll catch you off guard.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I find myself in a decent Halloween mood these days, which is not normal for me. I like the holiday, but I don't dress up. I don't generally go to parties. I like the visual aesthetic, and all the fun monsters and cartoons and stuff, but I don't tend to like, you know, be super excited about Halloween. But it's funny that you mentioned The Exorcist, because that is one of those movies that I watched when I was way too young, up late at night on my own. Only knew about it through pop culture. You know, some kid at school probably thought that it was scary. And but you know, for me, it was like, well, you know, whatever. I'll watch it. I was old enough to know that it was a movie. Like, it didn't like freak me out, but it was definitely Creepville. Like, it was like, wow, yeah. this is this is beyond, like, this is the kind of stuff that I'm not allowed to make fun of. Like, this will get me, you know, grounded if I, you know, if I make fun of this stuff. So having a movie about like religion and devil and possession and stuff was like, okay, wow, this is the kind of thing I know I would not be allowed to watch, which is probably why I was paying so much attention. But yeah, some of it was just like the way they had the actor move too, like the way that she was kind of like twisting and flipping around and stuff. I found that really, really bizarre. But at the same time, it also reminded me of the way that Sigourney Weaver moved in Ghostbusters, right? Like that's the kind of stuff that I was like, I'm familiar with it. It's like, okay, well, it's just an actor throwing themselves around. But like, I think because she was so young, like it kind of had that weird effect. Critters is the name of the cheesy horror movie that I saw. If you have a chance to Google that, you'll recognize them right away.
I remember those VHSs. Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing where, like, you know, it's 80 special effects and it was well done at the time, but if you at all know what a Muppet is, then none of this fools you, right? Like, it doesn't at all feel creepy or weird, you know, where some of the things that I saw later on, like, I don't know whether Relic would be called a sci-fi movie or a horror movie, maybe a sci-fi thriller. But I find that was pretty, you know, pretty creepy, you know, with this thing that they had computer animated and it was all in the shadows and stuff like that, you know, like, I had a couple of jump scares. They're not a horror movie, but Jurassic Park had scarier moments, I think, in it than most horror movies did for me. I'm trying to think about the things that I'm excited about for Halloween for that are on my list. I am embarrassed to say that I've still not seen Paranorman. So that is on Netflix right now for me.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. And I love The Nightmare Before Christmas. The problem is that I never know when I want to watch it. Like, do I want to watch it at Halloween or do I want to watch it between Halloween and Christmas? Because it's like, it's that movie that kind of has everything twisted together.
It does.
You know, like, when do I watch this? And I still haven't gone back to finish Book of Life. Aesthetically, it's beautiful. Like, I still covet the art book whenever I'm in the bookstore, but I have very little inclination to go back and finish the movie, mostly because of Cheech, but it's one of those things that's just not on my list. But I can appreciate the aesthetic this time of year for the Book of Life and like the celebration of the dead and how cool and creepy all the makeup and not the makeup, but like the designs of the characters with their face paint and all that kind of cool, creepy, you know, Mexican like Day of the Dead type of stuff.
Yeah.
It's very, very cool.
Did you see Coraline too?
Oh, I love Coraline. You know, I've got that. If there's one thing that I can say about the, you know, huge paradigm shift from DVD to Blu-ray, it's watching animation on Blu-ray, especially stop motion, is just mesmerizing to me.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, like, especially when they're made recently enough to have been filmed and like, probably on a red camera or 4K, and then they're reduced down as opposed to something that like Nightmare Before Christmas, which would have been filmed and then translated to Blu-ray, but it's not quite the same as something like Coraline, which is just wonderful, real and creepy. You like in a there's a couple of moments when I was watching Coraline where like I'm not freaked out, but it's like I don't know if I had kids at what age I would show them this movie. Because some of it is like the buttons for eyes thing. Like I can see a lot of people even under 8 being freaked out by that, right?
That's true. Yeah. Although I will say, and I read this article, which was interesting and I thought was fascinating because I think you and I definitely, for the most part, grew up in this time period when not just Disney, but like some of the other companies, they made cartoons, but they weren't afraid to have scary creatures in the cartoons. Like I think of, the Black Cauldron just comes to mind, but I mean, the Horned King was terrifying, but like Maleficent, like creatures that like are frightening. Mm-hmm. And then even like they would do like
even if you go away from cartoons, like the Noth in The Neverending Story.
Right, exactly. Like there was definitely creatures that were frightening. And I think particularly the late 70s and 80s was a period where
Jim Henson, Disney, all these great creators or companies or, you know, people around those creators, they weren't afraid to scare children, not like in the way of like children should definitely not be seen, The Shining or Exorcist or whatever, but like in the way that like by the time you grow up, you look at something like Gremlins and think this is not a frightening film, but this is a film that really resonates with children. But like children do love thrills. It's just knowing that perfect balance. So it is difficult. You know, as a hopeful parent someday, I will be fascinated because I was a child who regularly I would rewatch my VHSs of Star Wars and Indiana Jones from the age of like maybe 9 and mm-hmm. up. Like I'd still cover my eyes for the melting zombies, but I pretty much saw everything else from like age 10 and up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, well, hey, I came out fine, I guess. So
yeah. It's funny. I need to correct myself. It's Gmork is the wolf villain that I was thinking of. I misheard him when I was a child, and I have always mispronounced it ever since. Like,
the Noth is something though, isn't it?
Well, there's the Nothing, and then there's the Gmork, which is what the Nothing has sent. And then there's the Gorgamon. Like there's a bunch of different things, but I think it's because when Gmork says his name, because the voice actor was putting on some sort of like beastly kind of, you know, heavily salivated voice, it sounds like a TH at the end, but it's like when he says it, but it's like in the credits, and then the Wikipedia is telling me it's Gmork, which I don't ever remember him saying, but you know, but I don't know, maybe it's just, again, like it's these weird impressions that you have, you know, cause I mean, I remember that was something that I thought was, scary as a kid,
mm-hmm.
was definitely him, you know, despite the fact that, I mean, like the special effects do not hold up.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing. And some of those, that is one thing though, if you ever see the thing, the John Carpenter's The Thing, much like American Werewolf in London, are one of those films where you go back and you watch and you're probably not scared because the special effects have changed so much, but you're still taken aback by the creativity of practical effects and how good they look. Like, you're not probably thinking during the werewolf transformation, like, you know, this looks entirely real, but you're definitely like, holy shit, how did they do that for real? Like, it is, it's fascinating. And then you can always take time to go out and like look up the history, and you know, some of those films are just legendary for that stuff. But can I say ask a quick question and recommendation of, so you don't do a lot of horror stuff. I do know you listen to podcasts, obviously. Are you a person who is interested in historical things at all?
No, or... I've never been a big history buff. I mean, if it's presented to me in one of the things I'm already listening to, then sure. But I don't usually go seeking it out. Okay. I'm more of a fiction guy.
Well, Amazon just picked up and is doing basically television, like little snippets or mini episodes of this podcast that's been popular, I guess, for a while. Started in 2015, called Lore, L-O-R-E. And I picked it up just recently, and it is pretty much in my ballpark because I'm interested in history, but I like it in bite-sized nuggets. And this is specifically about the more supernatural folklore of the world. Like, one episode might be about a real life serial killer and sort of the stories around that person a little bit, but also it might be about the changeling ideas of Ireland or the
that's cool.
What was the Pukwudgie? Which I had never heard before until I did the Harry Potter quiz for the American House, but the Pukwudgie is a very New Englander. I'm almost surprised that it hasn't, that Pukwudgie isn't in like Nova Scotia, but like apparently that area of the world, it was like sort of like a, like basically a tree gnome porcupine creature thing that was very mischievous. But then, you know, there'll be an episode that was sort of like an idea of why we have vampires or an idea of why we've thought of werewolves. Like, there's certain just folklore stories from certain communities he'll focus on that sort of heavy, you know, will give you an idea. And almost nothing is ever modern per se. Like, he's not going to go out of his way to talk about, I mean, so far he hasn't talked about pretty much anything past 1940, unless it started way, way, way back and like it is still affecting things. So, and they're short, they're biweekly, they're usually less than 20 minutes. So if other people are interested in some spooky, semi-spooky, more just spooky because it's based on real life cultures and stories.
Yeah. I might have to stick to the podcast. I don't think I can get Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. Canada.
Yay. So anyway, L-O-R-E, lore.
Yeah. The podcast is like the top Google hit. Like, you just have to type in lore. Just bam. Very, very top. It looks really cool. And the Pukwudgie looks really interesting. I feel like, unfortunately, the Google image search for Pukwudgie is kind of saturated with Harry Potter versions.
Yeah, that's probably it.
But I'm curious. What I'm going to do after the show is I'm going to Google Pukwudgie and my friend J.B. Monge and his work, because he does fairies and goblins and all kinds of Celtic folklore and things like that he finds really interesting. And I'm imagining that a Pukwudgie or something very similar to one is probably in his repertoire, and I'd love to see his take on it. That'd be really, really cool.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us into the end of the show. This is normally where we'd have a little bit of an internet minute, but really don't have much to recommend. So I'm just going to talk about Patreon, and that is where you can go to support this podcast. If you like what Brock and I are talking about, or what Lou and I were talking about last week, head on over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. If you become a patron, then you can join the patron-only Discord chat, and you can have all the warm and fuzzies knowing that you are supporting this podcast and helping us make more. So please go ahead and check out patreon.com/thecitadelcafe and become a patron today. You can find everything that I am doing at joelduggan.com. You can go to forgepublishing.com/inktank to check out the new book that I'm trying to publish with Rob Momartz and his phenomenal work. It's Momaerts for Momartz. Just look him up by name, 2Bs and Rob on Instagram. You will not be sorry, especially because we're in the middle of Inktober and he is cranking out these beautiful 9x12 original pieces based on the word prompts from the Inktober Drawing Challenge. And some of the stuff that he's done has just been fantastic. So far, my favorite is one he did for Underwater, which is this beautiful, you know, pretty mermaid kind of tilting her head, and she's wearing a pirate hat, and everything above water is pristine and serene, and then underwater she's holding the pirate that she took the hat from under and he's gasping for breath and struggling, and she's just happy to drown him. Like, it's a wonderful drawing. So check out Rob Momartz on Instagram as well. This podcast is a place that you can find all kinds of things. You can go to thecitadelcafe.com to download previous episodes. We normally record on Wednesdays, so if you want to kind of write in, let us know your favorite horror movies, your favorite Halloween candy, do so before next Wednesday, and we'll get that on the show. And the music for the show is also composed by Kevin MacLeod. Brockett, where can people find you and your candy rants online?
You can check out Instagram at B as in boy, E, B as in boy, O, P as in peanut, V as in Victor, E, E. I picked a lot of letters that sound the same. BebopV23 on Instagram, or you can search hashtag candy of this day, because candy of the day is too popular for hashtag, and I wanted to own it, so I did that. So, and while the show was happening, I'm sorry to pull back the curtain, I don't always pay 100% attention, because during that time I went to my Kickstarter app, and I backed your Kickstarter.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
So I'm just one of it. And I said Rob that on air well, so I could get thanked on the air. So that's what I did. So guys, get on the show and then back Instagram. It'd be great.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. I'm sure Rob does too. And thank you for coming on the show. I know that you've been busy with moving into a new place, but I always love the Candy of This Day episode. It's always a fun walk down the confectionery lane that I don't usually go. I try to stay away from the candies. I'm too into the cookies and the pies and the baked goods to have any room left in my cheat sheet.
Ugh, I would really be dead if I did pie of this day. So don't worry about that.
I have ideas now. I have ideas. You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.